Let's face it, there are so many things that you can do in marketing your church, but not all of them are as effective as the other. In this conversation, we're going to unpack exactly which channels are the best for marketing your church, and I'll tell you why. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about the most effective marketing strategies for churches. We're going to do a ranking today and share with you where your hard-earned time is best spent, and hard-earned dollars in some senses is spent when it comes to reaching out and reaching more people for your church. So should be a good conversation. We eat, breathe, and sleep church marketing here at Reach Right. That's what we've been doing since 2016. Coming up on our 10-year anniversary, by the way, Ian.
Look at that. I know.
You and I got going like December of 2015, I guess. So we're in our 10-year anniversary time. So we've been around the block. Yeah. You and I have been in the church marketing space since 2006, 2007. That time frame there, it is a wildly different world from what it used to be back then. In those times, the primary marketing method when you and I started was mailers and billboards and television commercials.
Those
are some of the biggest things, right? So
yeah,
all of those would rank very poorly.
Don't forget tracks.
And tracks, of course. Have you ever given out tracks, Ian?
Maybe when I first became a believer, and then I quickly was kind of like, maybe I should try something else.
Maybe a different approach might work.
Yeah. Not that God hasn't used tracts.
Yeah.
There's some
people. So you and I, we got our start working for a company that did television commercials for churches.
Yeah.
They were bankrolled by Joel Osteen's dad, John Osteen.
Wow. Yeah.
And he got us going with a few TV commercials. And we were very late in that. So it was kind of a diminishing returns type thing at that time. But there was a heyday where it was all about television commercials and it was all about mailers. And I think that the focus of this episode is on digital marketing strategies.
Yes.
And the reason for that is because they are much, much better than physical ones. Right.
Yeah.
They're current. Yeah. And the big advantage of digital marketing over physical marketing is, in my view, is measurement and also targeting. Those are the two things that are really valuable about these areas is that you can measure it really well. All of these things are things where you'll have direct feedback on how it's performing. And in most cases, you can be very specific, whereas things like television commercials and mailers and that kind of stuff, they were very broad. You could usually target a zip code or a demographic area on a television commercial, but you couldn't say, I only want this ad to show to women in between 25 and 35 that have young kids, like you can now with some of these current marketing channels that we have.
Yeah.
So, all that being said, we're going to get in and give you guys kind of a ranking.
Yeah, another ranking.
What's working, what isn't, and I don't know, you want to explain our ranking system, Ian?
Yeah, for this one here, and we always have fun with these and try to come up with some good terms, we will have, for our best one, an essential digital marketing strategy, and then a recommended one, which is good, but maybe not the highest priority. And then we'll have optional. So only if you have extra time and money on your hands for that one, I guess.
I hear from pastors all the time. It says, hey, Thomas, I have lots of extra time and money on my hands. What should I do with it?
Like,
that's what pastors tell me all the time, right?
Oh, hey, which I don't know the ones you're talking to, but yes. So, that's good. So and this should be helpful. We'll dig in. I'll ask you, Thomas, excited. We got this first one, which I think is tried and true. A church website.
Essential.
Yes,
next.
Of course. Still.
No, let's... I think you and I were chatting before this about you had a conversation with a small church pastor who basically, I think what you said is he said that I don't need to do a church website. I have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we've heard that since Facebook started, I think.
Right.
That's been something that we've heard. It rarely comes from like larger churches.
I've never
heard it from a larger church.
Yeah.
But it's usually someone that's, and it is true, you have a kind of a digital presence.
Sure.
You can do that on Facebook.
You can have some of the same information, but
yeah. But the problem with that, obviously, and this is something that I'm sure our audience mostly knows, is that you don't control who sees what on Facebook. You can make your profile, you can have a page, but the distribution of it is controlled by Facebook, and they have the ability and often do completely suppress any of your content. Yeah. It used to be, you know, this was more compelling. It still didn't make sense then, but it was more compelling 10 years ago when if I put an event on Facebook, it would go out to all of my followers of my church. Or if I put a post on there, everybody would see it that's on Facebook. Whereas now, that's just not the way that that Facebook works anymore. You post it, and unless you pay for it, very few of your followers will actually see a post unless it gets a lot of traction and goes viral. So, so that's about Facebook. Websites are important. It is your home base. It should be the place you send everybody. Yep. It should be the primary. It basically is the hub of all of the other digital marketing stuff that you do. Everything else we'll cover. One of the primary goals is to send them onto your church website and get them to engage with you on there and start their process of visiting, getting assimilated, getting discipled, becoming fully committed members of your church. So essential.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I'll just add real quick is just that search engines are actually, and we're not going to get ahead too much here, but they're looking to send traffic to a website first and foremost in most cases, right. And also looking for good landing pages. That's another thing that you can't really do on social compared to is having a well-designed page with good content that actually helps people take next steps. So there's just... There's the thing that's really cool to see over time with church websites is how they've evolved, you know, and how they still have stayed relevant. And we don't know what's going to happen 10, 20 years down the line necessarily with these, but with church websites, but do know that they continue to evolve. The strategy behind them continues to evolve. So I found it interesting, as like you said, Thomas, as long as we've been in the church marketing world, how they have stood the test of time and still are the foundation. So totally agree, essential. Next one, another biggie, social media. We've already been talking about that. Yep.
Yeah. So social media, not as a replacement for a website. That's foolishness.
Right.
But I would say that social media as a whole, I wouldn't put it as high as a church website. Like you could, I guess so in that sense, like, is it essential? Can a church exist without social media?
Yeah,
it can. But I'd still put it in the essential category. Yeah. It's something that I'm not saying every social platform, and we actually recently did another ranking episode a couple weeks ago about ranking social media platforms. If you want to know which one I think you should be on, you can check out that episode. I'll put a link to that up here so you can take a look. So do check that out. But just generally speaking, I think churches should choose a social media platform. And you'd probably choose the one that your audience most uses. I think that kind of a spoiler for that other episode is that YouTube and Instagram are probably the ones that are closest to being essential right now, I would say. So that's my take on social. It's something that you can exist without it, but I just think it's such a huge opportunity that to ignore it would be foolish at this point. Yeah. That being said, it does take work. Like it's not, people have this total misunderstanding that it's just kind of playtime, that creating social content and those things. My goodness, it is a, it can, it's fun, but it can be a grind to have to do this because what matters in social media most is consistency. So like, social media, like posting, you know, when you feel like it, what's going to happen is you might post 2 days in a row, not post for 7.5 weeks, post another post, and that just doesn't cut it. It's a grind of doing it consistently every single week, at least, you know, multiple posts a week would be a minimum.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do it every day.
And think strategy as well. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's right. So, yeah. So I'd say, I'd say essential. I can't say anyway. It certainly is recommended too, but it's right at the essential line.
Next one, email lists for church marketing. Let's just say
email lists for church marketing. Okay. Yeah. So, gosh, like I want to not just be kind of a everything is essential, but like this is pretty essential too. Like it. I guess I'm okay to say it's like extremely highly recommended.
Yeah, there you go.
To do it. I think it'd be just really hard to do some of the things that churches should be doing today without using email. I think it's the most, it's the best communication channel to this day.
Yeah.
It's better than social media communication. It's probably more, it's probably better for mass communication than text messaging. So the two primary things that I think about, I want you to remove from your mind the idea of the weekly church newsletter, kind of the boring thing that updates on, you know, what's happening at First Baptist this week, that kind of thing.
Yep.
That's not what I'm talking about. But I think that a well-crafted weekly message that is written from the perspective of your pastor with a clear call to action to take a step, whether it be towards an event or a next step that's happening for someone that's newer, that's very valuable.
Yeah.
And I think even more valuable than that is ironing out a really great sequence for your first-time visitors. Someone comes for the first time, having an email sequence that helps them kind of figure out what's my next step, what do I do next, how do I get involved, what do I do, how do I connect with the people of our church, those kinds of things. And you can craft an email sequence that really does a great job of those kinds of things. So, you know, I guess it's recommended only that if you're doing, the other alternative is doing that by hand and like writing different emails and things every single week that way.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you can. But now I'm just going to say essential again. I think this is something that is really important and I wouldn't do church without it.
I think I know what you're going to say for this next one. Live streaming services.
Yeah, another one we just did an episode about.
Yeah, that's right.
So literally last week, our episode was all about live streaming services and how we think you shouldn't do it. I'll just say it that way.
Right.
If you want to fight me on it, do it in the comments. I'd love to hear your feedback. But yeah, I'd encourage you to watch this first before you do a comment on stuff. So watch this episode. We talk all about live streaming and that and why for the vast majority of churches, it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's lower than optional. I think it's an option you shouldn't choose in most cases is what I would say for it. So definitely the bottom tier for us. Optional, if you have extra time and money, is a great way to say it.
That's
if you have lots of people with extra time and thousands of disposable dollars, then live streaming is a great fit for you.
That is, it is. And you're right. Watching that episode will give people some really good context there. So next one's an interesting one, the Google Ad Grant.
Okay. Google Ad Grant. So full disclosure, we this is one of our primary things that we do here at ReachRight, is we help churches get and manage the Google Ad Grant.
Yep.
Is it like as essential as a website for your church? No, probably not. Like you need to have a website to even do it in the first place.
I was going to say, so,
So you have to do a website. So I guess like it's, I'm having a hard time like being all or nothing on this
episode. Would you say recommended because it's just free money for the taking?
Yeah. It's definitely recommended. It's not optional. I think I recommend it to everybody. I'm wrestling with whether I could say it's essential or not. Like maybe not. Like does your church survive without it? Probably. But again, so if you don't know, the Google Ad Grant is every church that's set up as a nonprofit in the U.S. or in I think like 180 different countries across the world are eligible for $10,000 every single month in free Google ads. All you have to do is claim it. It really is a simple process. We have a super simple eligibility checker. I'm going to put a link to that down in the description so you can hop on and it takes you like 45 seconds. There's a few questions. It'll tell you whether you're eligible for it or not. I think every church should be doing it. I think it's something that's a kind of a no-brainer. Is it an essential life or death thing for a church? No, I can't say that it is. So maybe we'll put this one in our first recommended one.
There you go.
But like, I think you should do it. Like, so it is highly recommended.
Yeah. Next one's an interesting one to me. Google Business Profile.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm such a black and white person, I guess. So your Google Business Profile. So just to give you some explanation on this, it used to be called Google My Business. Before that, it was called, there was a name for it. It was like, Google's social media attempt.
Wasn't Groups.
No, it wasn't Groups.
Why are we, Plus? No.
Yeah, Google Plus.
Was it?
Google Plus.
Yeah.
Maybe for a while. I don't know. There was Google's tried so many things, and this is what it became. And it still is super important today. So you do a search for First Baptist Church, and you're sitting in in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Google has designed their algorithm to know that when someone has a local intent for their search, they're probably looking for this First Baptist Church, not the one in Nantucket. They're looking for the one in Austin because that's where they are. Yeah. It will then, instead of showing just a link of all the different churches that are First Baptist Church and anybody that used that in an article, they'll actually show what their best guess is of the local organizations that match that search intent. Yeah. So if someone types in just things like church near me, then in that case, there's kind of a competition for which church Google is going to recommend as the number one church to recommend when someone's looking for a church. And this is something that's very common for someone that's brand new to an area. You just moved to Austin and you were part of a church when you lived up in Dallas.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're going to look for churches in Austin or churches in Pflugerville or church near me is what people can, and Google's smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah.
Your Google Business Profile is the main thing and really like one of the only things that determines how well you show up on that kind of a search.
Yeah.
So super important, I think, that you get it dialed in. So I would say, let's say it this way. It's essential that you have your basic information in your Google Business Profile. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like, is it essential that you dedicate a lot of time into managing it and putting updates onto your Google Business Profile? Probably not essential, but I'd say that's in the recommended category.
Yeah.
The biggest thing you can do for your Google Business Profile to show up on those searches is to get reviews from people. So you want people in your church and outside of your church, people that would give you a 5-star review and write a little bit about who you are as a church.
Yeah.
That's what's really important. Now that might seem weird to you, like why would a church need reviews? Think of them as testimonies.
That's
what you're really asking for is tell me about your experience at our church and what God's done for you since you've been part of this church here. So that's a big part of it. Alternatively, it's also important that you have lots of references and other like listing organizations linking to your church and linking to your address and making sure that their maps are set up properly. So that is something you probably want to pay a service to do. That's the easiest way to do that. We offer that service here at ReachRight for churches, helping you really lock in your Google Business Profile that way. So we'll leave a link to that down in the description as well.
All right. So essentials 4 for 6 so far. So next one here is YouTube channel.
Gosh.
I know it's not getting any easier for you.
Yeah, I want to give bad news. Like, I want to tell people things that we shouldn't do. Like, it's a waste of time, but...
Well, a couple of those might be coming. I won't spoil it, but go ahead.
Yeah, so is a YouTube channel... It's not essential like a website is essential.
Yeah.
I'd say it is essential the same way that, like, social media is essential, because it is, in my view, the most important social media channel for churches. Because you're already doing all the hard work. You're in most cases filming your services. You have videos of your sermons. They're great weekly content. YouTube is a great channel for churches because it has an instant push where people will see your messages right now, but then a message that's well delivered and well edited, it can live on for years and years.
Yeah.
And, you know, case in point, we have messages that we have messages that get a few views every single week, but if you kind of take that and you do that over 5 years, that's 250 messages that are giving 5 views a week. That's thousands of views every week of your content that people are engaging with, that the gospel is being preached through. So it's essential. I can't say anything else besides that.
There you go. Next one, search engine optimization, SEO.
Okay, so this one may be something that ruffles some feathers. I would say that search engine optimization, it would have been recommended a couple of years ago. It's right on the fence for me today between optional and recommended. And this is something that is so important to us. Like, so we have been writing a blog and been doing SEO stuff for our business and for churches for, you know, as long as we've existed as a company. So, and we see so many of our requests still to this day come through our SEO efforts. That being said, for a typical church, I don't think that SEO, and I'm not talking about local SEO, the one we talked about before, when people are looking for churches near me, your Google Business Profile. This is for more kind of on-page, wide SEO. So trying to rank in the organic search engine results for any number of terms. So I don't think this is something that churches in most cases should be putting a lot of effort into. There's bigger fish to fry, I think, than that. Yeah. I wouldn't put it as low as like live streaming your services, but I think doing search engine optimization, I just see headwinds in this area, with especially with the rise of AI and using some of that. I think people are going to be searching less and less, and those organic results are actually already showing clear signs of diminishing. So I would say that I probably wouldn't put a ton of effort into this, but it is kind of a nice to have thing. So yeah. If you've already been doing it, I wouldn't say stop. But I think if you're thinking about what should I put my time into, unless you have some extra time, I think that would be kind of on the bottom end.
Yeah, that's good. Next one, this one's kind of more general here, just online ads. We talked about Google ads, of course, from the grant, but online ads in general.
Yeah. Okay, so there's two primary ones that I think of when I think of online ads. I think there's very other channels are really much like not as useful. So you could like, you know, take out ads in your local newspapers, online ad section and that kind of stuff. That's fine. But I think that's not even optional. I wouldn't, it's very low on the ranking list. As far as online ads, I think of spending money on Google ads and then spending money on Meta ads, or, and then you could kind of lump in TikTok ads or X ads or YouTube ads are a little tougher with that kind of stuff. So the upside is they are extremely targeted, and there's a lot of value in being able to do that for a church. I've had great success on Meta ads and Facebook ads and Instagram ads specifically when we're promoting an event at our church. So we've done well with Easter promotions. We've done really well with Halloween promotions for a church. So kind of around a seasonal thing, we would do a Halloween party at our church, or maybe you're more familiar calling it a harvest party or something like that. But advertising that and paying for it, you can just get great return for very little investment on that. So I think it's really good in that sense. For just general Facebook ads of like trying to get more Facebook followers or get more people onto your website, probably not for most churches. So I think it's like a solid optional, I would say.
Okay.
not something you have to do. I think I'll make one caveat. It's recommended to me for event promotion. I think that's a good place to do it. It's optional, I think, outside of that. So doing general ones. I think one big thing too is that to talk about Google ads for a second, you should be doing the Google ads for free with the grant. Some churches have had such a hard time spending the Google grant because they do put some caveats and make it harder for you to spend free money. Like if you were to just say, hey, I have $500 a month to spend on Google ads, you'd spend that. It'd be so easy. Like there'd be no problem with that at all. It's hard sometimes to do that with the grant. So, but I don't really recommend that. Just general Google ads are not a good choice for most churches to spend money on that. So it's optional there, but for event promotion specifically, I'd say recommended for that.
Okay, good. And we're nearing the finish line with two more here. This next one is a church mobile app.
Optional. I don't like church mobile apps. I think this is kind of in the same category as live streaming for me, is that you almost certainly don't have the budget to build your own mobile app and get it approved by Apple and all those things. So you're probably going to be left to use a third party's app. And what that would mean is that you would have people from your church go get a church app and then find their church, your church in the drop-down menu, and then, kind of save it as that. And then it kind of becomes your church app. It a lot of times misses the branding and those things, but there's not enough critical mass in most cases. And I would say that even better would just be having people put the homepage of your church website on their home screen so they can go there immediately. That's the same stuff you're going to put onto a church app anyway. So I think that it's probably, it's optional. If you have extra money and extra time, then do it. But I don't think it's something that most churches should do.
And that might surprise a lot of people. I think some may disagree. It's been a buzzword and a lot of churches just think they have to have one. Now it was more of a buzzword several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago when they were really starting to come on the scene or just, becoming prevalent. But I agree with you. Most churches that I talk to, they don't utilize them quite as well. But I think in a lot of folks' minds, they'll still disagree. You're right. There you go. We want to hear disagreements. Last one here, podcasting.
Oh,
again, okay, for church marketing. It's always good to kind of present the context for. So yeah.
We're in the middle of a podcast right now. So,
right.
So obviously we believe in it. Like it's something that we do. We're 250 episodes deep in this. So just coming up on 5 years of podcasting every single week, Ian, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So we believe in it. I have to say that it's probably optional for churches. I don't know that I recommend it for most churches. It would be in the optional category. I was just talking to my wife about it this week. Like there's value like in just getting your sermons to be delivered as a podcast. So if it could pop into iTunes for people or, you know, onto Spotify that way, there's some value in that kind of stuff. I think that's pretty cool. I would recommend, as we've been doing from the beginning, a video podcast. I think that's even more valuable because then you get some of the YouTube juice and everything. The challenge with podcasting is it's very hard to discover an audio podcast without really like clear media pushes to do this kind of stuff. So, to this day, like our podcast is like 95% video watchers and very limited listening on iTunes or Spotify or other places like that. So there's some value in it. To the question of whether it should be your sermons, I think I think it's definitely optional to make an additional episode of some kind of conversation every week. It's just a lot of work. And if you have the time to do it, it could be cool, but it's not for everybody. You know, to the idea of podcasting your services every week and kind of putting that sermon out there. Yeah, I mean, there's some value to that, I think. But again, not something that I would even go as far as say that I recommend it for every church. I'd say it's optional.
Yep. It's good. Well, that was a pretty good list there and very informative, Thomas. Thanks. And I'm sure that was helpful to our watchers.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't, though. Maybe someone disagrees with me.
I want to know about disagreements.
Yeah, you're thinking this guy sits on a throne of lies. Like, if that's you, then let me know. I would love to. I'd love to talk about it. Now we respond to every comment still. And just so you know, like, it's actually us responding to every comment. So today I forwarded a comment where in a previous episode Ian referenced huffing glue. I think is what he said.
Not for personal use.
Not for personal consumption. No. Yeah, but he made a reference to that.
Reference.
You know, so we really see these things, and it's really us responding to some of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, drop us a comment. I'll give you our real thoughts on what we think, and we can have a conversation. We'd love to talk with you. Thanks, guys, for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.